I have a question,
thank you.
A new question. So what I'd like to know is, you spoke about the messages you hear around the world. For you, what is the most frequent message you hear that people want to learn about today?
Yeah, it's always this conflict between working hard and surrendering. And it comes in different forms, but it's the same question all the time. Like, how can I have faith that God's protecting me, promoting me, loving and perfecting me, but like still want things and work hard for them? And people get very confused about the infinite compared to the human experience. And so where you'll see a lot of my content trying to help people is to reconcile being able to say, look, this is a human experience. It starts when my heart starts, stops when my heart stops. And there's man-made constructs in the human experience that have nothing to do with the infinite nature of God. But you need them both. You need them both. And so most commonly it's like, well, I want to get my business going, but I want to spend time with my kids. That is a conflict between the infinite and the man-made construct. And so there's varying degrees, and that's why I focus in on time so much, is that if I can teach people to use time correctly, they'll have enough time to take care of their sleep, their health, their family, their finance, their faith, and their family. And then they have to have every day, 7 days a week, the study of time and the relativity of it. So most of the coaching I do, even at the highest level, chairman of Gulf Oil, Major League Baseball, executive director, the bigger high paying gigs that I have to help people, it's really time based. Yes, I make some introductions to make sure if you're paying me a lot of money, I'm moving the needle so that I pay for myself, right? And that's the advantage I have as a coach that other people don't. And I'm really honest about it. It's like, I can make introductions, but my real mission isn't. Right. I know I have to be a business case to those type of people, but my real mission is to get to those top people and change the way they look at things, because they've managed thousands of people. And if I can get them to teach their people that you can do this job and have fun and make a lot of money and reconcile the human experience. Who was I with yesterday? And I was like, it was in Chicago, but somebody blew me off for their son. And I was like, right on. And they were like super apologetic. I was like, oh, I go, you just doubled down on how much I love you. Like, anybody tells me, instead of lying, just says, hey man, my son freed up and I'm going to do this with my son. You know, I'm 100% going to be with you. You don't have to apologize to me. And so many people do, they make excuses and then they create this unauthentic and wrong essence because they make up a lie because they feel bad about prioritizing their family or prioritizing their health. I mean, my employees, I have to work so hard. Like, Nick travels with me and it took him years before he's like, hey man, I want to go work out. Never does he hear, oh, it's the middle of the day, or I know you got 16 million calls to do. What do you mean you're going? Never would I say that, because you always got 16 million calls if you work with me. That's my job, is to be in abundance, right? You're supposed to have so many options, opportunities, and touches of favor. So if all you're worried about is I got more calls, you'll never spend time with your friends, your family, your health, your faith, all of that. Great question.
Beautiful, sir.
So I was lucky to hear the story and the title of the book. But now that you've paid a lot of dummy tax in your life, how can you bet the dick out faster?
That's good. Yeah, we're good. As small as it is, you can bet it out. You can never see the problem with this idea. So the idea of don't do business with dick was to sell books, because title sell book, right? It's really toxicity. So can you vet out negative energy or toxicity? That's why the subtitles, right? You know, be able to ditch toxicity and find positive influence. So here's the strange thing about persons that are assholes or dicks, right? That really good people that get desperate do shitty things.
Okay. But they're still good people.
They're good people. Most people are good people. But, and so we can vet people out, but do we know the circumstance that they're in? And so that's why forgiveness and gratitude are so closely tied. Now, as far as vetting out toxicity, negative energy, dishonesty, here's the psychological loop that people go into. I want the deal so bad, so I start dealing with somebody about the deal. I start picking up on things that are not true. I don't vet it properly, you know, and so because I want the deal so bad, or I like the person so much, and it'll be so uncomfortable. You know how uncomfortable it is when you're like hiring salespeople and they're like, well, my last job, I made $450,000 selling this. And my first question is, can I see your W-2? You know how many years it took me to feel comfortable saying that? Do you know how many people actually showed me their W-2 that were exaggerating? Zero. Every single one of them were exaggerating. So they now were stuck. And some were making like 350, right? They were close. And I wanted to hire them because they were good. But they're oversellers. And so, asking uncomfortable, but here's the loop that happens. So I know you're lying to me. I'm afraid to ask you uncomfortable questions or vet out properly and call people and say, did you actually do this deal? Or did you actually make that much money? Or did you pay him that? Whatever these uncomfortable questions are, and I don't do that, then what happens is sooner or later, the truth comes out, the deal doesn't go well, and then you blame that person for what you already knew that you were too chicken shit to call them on because you wanted the deal. You thought you could overcome whatever incongruency there was in the truth. And it's not easy to vet. And so a lot of times, you vet it out and it's just not worth it, right? When we were younger, you lived in a place where maybe there was 300,000 total people, or you worked in the industry and it was very tight knit. So you had to live up to a standard because you literally could ruin your reputation. Today, reputation management is so less important because there's so many stories and people are just so numb to holding people to a fact. And there's always two sides to every story and all this content. And people are just like, I don't know, man. I like the guy. Even though six people have warned you and six people have told you he's the greatest person. I went at CreativeCon. Like I said, half of the place came to my meetup. Super big fans there, et cetera. And one of the ladies, I gave everybody my cell phone, which I always do, right? I'll give you my cell phone. I give anybody in the world 5 minutes of my time. Anybody. Keep it to 5 minutes, though. And so I gave out my cell phone and this lady came up afterwards and goes, I know that's not your real cell phone. Can I have your real cell phone? I go, no, that's my real cell phone here. She said, well, I went to dinner with Sam. I won't say his last name. And he was like, Dave Meltzer doesn't give out his real cell phone. Don't buy that bullshit. He's full of shit, blah, 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 all this stuff. Right. And I'm like, here's your number, right? Call. And this is my cell phone. Well, what it is I have a text number, and anybody that really follows me or is engaged in my thing is I have an information and invitation text number that will bother you if you don't like to be invited or informed. And he was probably calling my text number. And I've had other people do that or and then say, hey, I tried you, or worse, they text the text number, not my number. It's not always a perfect system, that text number, but when you have hundreds of thousands of people that you invite, it works really well. And you miss it. But it hurt my feelings at first. Because I'm like, shit, this guy's out there telling people I'm full of shit. I'm a dick. Right? I got a book, Don't Do Business with Dick, with my name below it. It's probably like, damn right, don't do business with Dave Meltzer. And yet it still hurts my feelings. It still hurt my feelings. And I wanted to call him. Right? I had to fight the fact that I wanted to call him. And I didn't. Right? I'm not going to give any energy to it. But I would have had to call him if we were in a small situation where I lived in a town and he was going around my town telling anyone, but he has no impact on my life. You know, there's so many people that say so many different things. People want to find out for themselves, which is why it's so important to vet even more, because you got to find out for yourself.
Question. You teach a lesson and you tell a story about, I think it's good.
Yeah. My first review, it was the biggest reviewer, yeah.
How that was promotion and protection. So I want to ask a question along the lines of same situation, but different amplification in terms of this person saying, right? So you had identified that that was promotion and protection, which is a free throw view. Where's the fine
line? Yeah, same thing. Good example. So the idea was Amazon, when I first came out 2013, it was 12, really. I got the review in the end of 12 and connected to goodness. This lady, the lead reviewer on Goodreads, which was the review of Amazon, and Amazon was the book company. And she said, one star, David Meltzer's an idiot. He thinks you can talk to water, that you could change the molecular structure of water by talking to it. And I cried to my, I'm like, I can't believe it. I have one star. No one's going to buy my book. But what happened was people that believed her did not buy my book, right? So I got no more negative reviews because anyone's in that mindset, they wouldn't like my book. And the funnier thing that happened was people that read the review, because she was such a big reviewer, never heard of Dave Meltzer, never heard of Connected to Goodness, but were like, I believe that. I want to read this book. This guy knows what I know. That you could talk to water and change it, right? And all these people started buying my book because this lady shit on me. And so this guy shit on me. I truly believe it was like this lady, right? If you would listen to somebody like that, you know, this guy's a jerk. He doesn't give out his real number, et cetera, without doing any due diligence or vetting yourself or giving an open mind a chance to someone. This guy's protecting me. Because those closed-minded people that make their decisions, I don't want them in my neighborhood or my community. I got millions of people that can come in here. And then I do want the lady that is like, that didn't sound like you, Dave, and ask me the question. And then I have more credibility and Sam does not. She's like, yeah, I don't really like that guy anyway. Oh. Now, so you are protected and promoted. Don't be afraid of the attacks, the judgments, the conditions of others. You know, there's, if you read Power versus Force, there's an energy to it as well. Remember, every force has a counterforce. It's physics. So you're okay with people having force against you because there'll be a greater counterforce. And there's ways today to monetize that counterforce, to aggregate the counterforce. There wasn't always a way to do so, but now there is, with in person, on the phone, via email and social media, to be able to utilize force and counterforce to your protection, promotion, love, and perfection.
Good question. All right. Thank you, Dave. So my question is, there's this point when you're about to step into a new level, like it's a real new level because, you know, your nervous system starts to freak out and do a bunch of things like,
there's my Bucky,
tell you all the reasons why you shouldn't do this and da da da, and all the excuses like, no, don't listen to that person, he's a dick,
yep,
whatever it might be. And it's always the point that you're stepping into the unknown, you're stepping into new territory. So when that happens for you, how do you recognize it? How do you recognize that your mind phone and what do you do to counteract?
So it changes for everyone. When you first start, it's very overwhelming. Right. It's very over. So people go to a Tony Robbins thing or a Bucky Firewalk or whatever. You're physically beat. Because there's so much energy, right, and frequency in your nervous system, your actual body can't handle it. So you'll see people get sick when they go to like Dr. Joe, like immediately after, or Tony does it, Bucky does it. And I stay away from it for a reason. I let those guys do it, and then I help people transition through that. That's where I think I fit in. But here's what happens. You start practicing it, and you can regulate that growth, right? So for me, it's a constant thing of categorization of, is this behavior, activity, circumstance of what I'm doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing, all of those combined, is it aligned with my divine direction or is it interfering with it? So I'm making very quick decisions. And if it's interfering with it, I know my only free will from God is to go back to God. So in the human experience, how do we go back to God? You have to stop. See, God does not want you to resist, go over it, under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, deny it, out-logic it, out-analyze it. That's not God. God says the only way, when you're presented with a struggle, I have the solution in the struggle. When you have pain, I have the solution in the pain. I am God. I'm omniscient, all powerful, and all knowing, and it's here already. There's just a lapse of man-made constructive time till you can figure it out. That's why I gave you a body to learn lessons, and the lessons will keep on coming until you learn it. So when you start realizing how important man-made constructive time is in every struggle, pain, setback, mistake, defining moment, historical relevance that cause resistance because it's not aligned with your divine direction and is impacting your nervous system, because it's what I'm doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing. And so when we realize that our free will is simply that we have the ability to go back to God, the only way to physically go back to God is to stop. It's not to go over, under, or through it and create force and counterforce to attack it. I mean, the thing that makes my stomach turn is that I study so many religions, philosophies, spirituality, and theories from all these things. I'm studying them. And every religious text, especially, the main tenet of almost every religious text that I've studied is thou shalt not murder. Guess what? You think God has a good sense of humor? I do. Because guess what's the number one cause of murder in the history of humankind? Humankind. Not dinosaurs, not nuclear weapons, not floods, drownings, not opiates. Religion. More people are killed in the name of religion over history than any other thing in history. And the number one tenet of every religion is thou shalt not murder. So if we can teach people just stop, breathe, drop, I call it reminding, remembering, and recollecting with God. Remind, remember, recollect with God. And then when you get at ease and you're at God, now you roll back into human behavior aligned in the divine direction. So the tenets of that is gratitude. Am I able to find the light, the love, and the lessons in the struggle? Forgiveness, so I could be at ease, right? Forgiving myself so I can give what I have. One of the other things in giving, which I'll talk about at dinner, but it's helped a lot of people. I could never figure out why really generous people never had money. Like my mom, super generous, second grade teacher, first responders, United States veterans, Dave, you're around them all the time. They give their life for everybody else. Like they're willing to give their life. This is real generosity, but they got no money. But my mom said, the more you give, the more you receive. Well, it's not true in man-made constructs. I promise you, the more love you give to people, the more you receive. You don't even have to think about it. It's automatic in the universe. God creates it. The more kindness you give, the more you'll receive. It's guaranteed. I promise you, you study physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics, you'll know in the infinite why it just loops in an infinite loop. Here's the problem. Money is an energy, yes. The energy recirculates, but it doesn't always take on the same form. So the more tables I give, the more tables I'm going to receive? No. The more I give in energy, the more I'll get back, but not in the same form because this is a man-made construct. This is the same as a $100 bill or a ETH. Coin or bit, right? It's exact same. So here's where my mom screwed me up in giving is she said, oh, honey, the more you give, the more you receive. So I make all this money and I'm just giving it away to charities and all this going, oh, well, God's going to take care of me and he'll give all that money back. And it did come back because it's a man-made construct. All these other things did come back. The energies that I was putting out, the kindness, the love, oh, it came back exactly like she promised. And it did in her life as well. When she passed, you know, just yesterday was at her unveiling with 14 grandkids and all their kids, you know, so much love. It was keep on coming, infinite. But the more time you give, you think you're going to get it back? Not a chance. It's a man-made, 24 hours is a man-made construct. Money is a man-made construct. And so we have to train people like, hey, slow down for a second. You got to make money. The more you give, the more you'll be given, but you have to do some work to figure out what you're given. Because when I lost everything, I tell people all the time, if somebody would have told me, oh my gosh, you are so blessed, all that you're given by losing $100 million in your mom's house, I'm so jealous of you. This is going to be amazing for you. I would have kicked him in the balls, like without even asking, like, what the fuck? Quit messing with me, dude. Like, this is a very low time in my life. But almost, you know, 18 years later, well, more than 18 years later now, it's 2026. So that I was given by losing everything, including my mom's house. I was given my health. I was given my marriage back. All these things would have not been given to me, but for that evidence that was not aligned with where I wanted to be, or it was actually contrary to what I think. So in that question about reconciliation, that's another thing that, people don't understand all the time. Why is it taking so long?
That's what I would say. So if you're pushing, pushing hard, trying to accomplish something, right? And you continually think you're doing the right thing, but you're not succeeding.
Yeah.
You know? So that's within you. Is the spirit in you is wrong?
Well, not wrong at all. No. So there's a variety of things. So there's, you know, for me, circumstances interest, because circumstances are to a specific time. So things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. So most people aren't looking at their behaviors and refining their behaviors. They're looking at outcomes and making an adaptation to an outcome that's irrelevant to the direction they're in. It's actually the behaviors. That's why I hedge God's guarantee of 24 hours by having non-negotiable behavior with very certain things that I know will accelerate, aggregate, and compound my success no matter what. So one, and most of you don't do this, I do, sleep. I know that sleep, it will do two things for me. It'll allow me to recover better and better and better if I continue to practice sleeping, and it'll allow me to access information, which elevates my awareness, my frequency, so that I make choices that are aligned with my divine direction because I have an elevated awareness. I got suckered into meditation because the lady that taught me to meditate said, I'll elevate your awareness. And she said, it's actually applicable when to buy or sell. I'm like, now that's a moneymaker. Imagine knowing when to buy or sell. It's pretty easy to get rich. Pretty easy to get rich. And so I've been elevating my awareness to make things easy in my life and recovering better and better and better. And so the idea of recovery, sleep is there just for those two things, to recover and to access information without the conscious mind, without judgment or condition, without fear. Now, how do you transcend that in the morning? Is part of your sleep, right? You have an unwinding routine, you sleep, you meditate to transcend the information, so you elevate your awareness, so things seem easy during the day, and you actually are using intelligence, intuition, and inspiration instead of a whole mess of behaviors, trying really hard, working really hard. I'm just active. I'm extremely active, but it's easy for me because I have more energy that I'm not interfering with as much energy as other people. Right? I tell a story all the time. I have an NBA all-star that wanted to shadow me because I do the PAC stuff, professional athlete community. He's like, Mr. Meltzer, can I just shadow you for a day? I said, be at my house at 4 a.m. and I will have you back by 5 p.m. when I have my family time. 4 a.m. to 5 p.m., you can shadow me. So by 4 p.m., he's sleeping in the backseat of my car. And when I wake him, he's like, how the hell? He goes, he's 27. He goes, I'm 27. I'm a way better shape than you. I'm stronger, faster. All the things should tell me that I should have more energy than you. I said, you don't. He's like, bullshit, man. I go, you don't have more energy. You have the exact same amount of energy. The difference between me and you is I'm not interfering with it. You were interfering with it all day long. Got on the phone with your girlfriend, got on the phone with your agent, got on. And every time it was wearing you out. It was interfering with that energy that we both have. I get on the phone and the conversation is not going well with my 26-year-old daughter. I'm stopping, dropping, and rolling. Right? There's no wasted energy. I'm just moving to the next thing. And so this idea of energy, so I'm very keen on these non-negotiable behaviors that says for half of my day, 12 hours a day, no matter what, I'm getting a minimum amount of sleep, minimum amount on my health, minimum amount with my family, minimum amount on my faith, minimum amount on my finance, 7 days a week. No off the grid. 7 days a week. Because why would you want to go off the grid when 90% of all of your outcomes are exponential when you stay consistent with what truly keeps you in the divine direction, which is your sleep, your health, your family, your faith, your finance, the study of time, so you get better at that. And then my last one, which confuses people, the study of relativity, which is the meaning of what you're doing, for the sake of what? See, God gave you this other power. And when I say God, it's your God, not mine. So you put whatever you want on that. But your God gave you a power to give meaning to everything you see, right? Like, so I have given a meaning to my bankruptcy. I've given a meaning to the mistakes, the setbacks, the failures. I give a meaning that's aligned with the divine, Because most people limit themselves by the meaning that they give their failures, setbacks, and mistakes, and they limit their self-image. And everyone that knows me will continually hear, you never will overachieve your own self-image. So if you're not studying meaning, then you're losing out on a lot of the advantages that you've been given in that reconciliation between the infinite God and man-made constructs.
So after you spoke about reconciling and everything, and I found after reconciling forgiveness and things, you get attuned and attunement comes in. Now, how do you, when you feel like you're tuning into this new vibe, like handle what you're hearing and stuff?
Yeah, so you're tuning, right? And so you're at elevated frequency, and then you're going to constantly have higher frequency. So there's three different zones, and this is how I see it in my head. So there's three concentric circles. The first is your comfort zone. If you stay in the comfort zone, it constricts down until you can't do anything. So people that sit at home high on their mom's couch end up broke and sick, and they end up incapacitated. So the comfort zone, you can't stay in the comfort zone. You can recover in the comfort zone, but you can't live in the comfort zone. And that's part of the problem with technology, is we're forcing people to live in a comfort zone where, you know, 4 a.m, you can order a toothbrush head and it is at your door at 9 a.m. And like, that was like a weekend search, you know, to find that thing. That's if you wanted to drive all around. So the other zone is the anxiety zone. So the anxiety zone constricts as well. So now, regardless of our frequency or our capability of what we do, say, think, feel, and believe, we're exposed to something that creates uncertainty, fear, anxiety. And if we stay there, this is why stopping is so important, we stay there, it actually will accelerate its constriction. And that's why people have nervous breakdowns. Like very high functioning people, Simone Biles, right? Like I know, but they'll break down and constrict. So once we realize that we have to be aware of the two constricting zones, we want to stay in the expansion zone, which is the learning zone, right? Which everyone has a different limit of learning, because if I push you, I may push you to learn and you'll find something that you never thought was inside of you, or I may break you because I put you in the anxiety zone, and then you see what I'm saying when I say so? Yeah. But as a mentor, coach, and teacher, which you are, you need to meet people where they're at. So you have to test and go. Right. And so, you know, some people, like our friend, he doesn't test enough. Like you can't just break. You can't just go at it. You got to just test it. And because it's this aggregated thing, you need to keep people in their comfort zone. I mean, in their learning zone, not their comfort zone. You can't baby them. They'll never learn anything. Like parents do this all the time. I think it's the biggest tragedy of what parents do to their kids is they keep them in the comfort zone. Way too much comfort. And you want to keep your kids in the learning zone. The best way to keep your kids in the learning zone is ask them three questions about whatever they want to do, and don't have them do anything that you want them to do. Have them do what they want to do as far as studying and work or whatever. But it's... Did you do your best at it? What did you learn? And did you have fun? So when this reinforces the learning zone for anyone is, did you do your best? Because your best, your basement may be so low, it may not be recognized as doing your best. And a lot of parents or teachers or coaches and mentors would be like, you're not trying. No, I am. I just really suck at basketball, but I'm doing my best here, right? What did you learn is super important, because that'll know and recognize you're in the learning zone. If someone's telling you they're not learning it, don't push. Keep asking them open-ended questions of what they like, don't like, what's working, what's not working, what they know and what they don't know, until they can tell you what they learned. If you push someone and don't know what they've learned, they're going to go right to the anxiety zone. And then also by confirming they're having fun. So now... Some people can have fun and push themselves really, really hard. Some people lose all the fun the minute you push. So those are the three things that I use as a parent and as a coach teacher, constantly knowing values derived by what they know, what they don't know, what they don't like, what's working, what's not working, and asking them, according to their subject matter, topic, and expertise, this idea of, hey, are you doing your best? yeah, I am, but I'm really sick, or I am, but I'm not, you know, getting, what did you learn? I haven't learned a fucking thing, man. Oh, okay. Well, what can I help you with? I've had people tell me that, right? I'm trying to teach four basic values: gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication. And I'll ask, you know, so what have you learned about the values? What do you know about them? And where I used to just jump down these kids' throat, like, you've been here 6 months. It's only four things: gratitude, empathy, accountability, right? And I'd push and I'd break them. And then they go, don't fucking work for Dave. He's a dick. That's exactly what happens. But I've learned that these are three things that we got to do to keep people in the learning zone. Those are the three things, and understand how values arrive.
Thank you. Also, thank you for Don't Do Business with Dicks, because I feel like, and you know this, the book was made for me after being with
Hoop. That's why I wrote it. Yeah. So many people. Yeah. Thank you.
Dave, thanks for the book. It's a real conversation starter on the airplane.
Right. It is, right?
Especially the chapter about Miller your dicks in.
Yeah, dicks everywhere.
I had to give my copy away. So.
We'll get a new one.
When I first met you in 2017, I had just done business with some dicks and I sold, and you helped me through next steps after that. But what advice do you give people when they realize if they're in business with the wrong people? You know, how do they get out of that?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a struggle as well.
It should be a struggle, because you're torn between the outcomes and what you know is eventually going to happen. And so I categorize it in three different ways. One, understanding the relativity or meaning of the situation. So I'm always studying how relative is this person, place, circumstance, business, because I combine them all. It's just not the person, but there's an analysis of relativity, considering where I want to be or better. What's the relativity of this person in alignment with my divine direction, or the interference of my divine direction? And then another consideration is just association, right? They're a board member. Well, that association changes things. I sat on a board with Donald Trump when I was young, and literally, he was not getting along with any of the board members. And they're like, dude, you got to go to a psychiatrist and figure out your shit so you can get along with all the board. And his response was, fuck you. Each of these guys need to go to figure out how to get along with me. There was an association though, right? Like, I was maybe 32 and he was Donald Trump. And so I knew the relativity of doing business with a dick, but I also had an association. Then comes the really one that makes the decision, which is the feeding aspect. So I used to think that the feeding aspect was, this person just fed me. But like Marianne's fed by being bled. One of the greatest experiences of my life was taking care of my mom. I don't think anything bled me more, even raising my own children. It was way easier than taking care. There's a lot to it, for me at least. But she's been gone a year, nothing fed me more. So I used to say, if it bleeds you, you know, fire it. If it feeds you, feed it. That's, you got to understand, feeding comes from, you know, pushing and bleeding and all these things. So, you know, there's those people that we are with. And I think doing analysis and saying, okay, what's the relativity association in the feeding of this? That'll determine, aligned with your timing and risk tolerance, it's time to sell out or to leave or to let it fall away. And you're one of my classic examples, because a lot of people would not have transformed like you did, living in Southern California with all of what everybody thinks they want or better, and then totally transforming your life in Montana, right? And you've never been happier, healthier, right? Fulfilled, passionate, purposeful. We miss you, but I get what you did.
I miss you too, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I love coming up there. I will once this kid goes to college. Thank you.
Great question. One final question.
All right, thank you. I might take two, just real quick. Yeah, both of these kids.
So I'm 60 years old, and I'm just wondering, as I'm becoming an adult and I'm exploring things like careers and education and all these different things in my life, how do you recommend the best way to determine, you know, the right path for me, and how I can, you know, as I interact with more people and as I sort of venture off into all these new opportunities as I get older, how do you think the best way is as a young person to approach all that mm-hmm. and avoid making mistakes so that I can, you know, just get as far ahead as possible in, you know, in music.
I love that. Well, first, thanks for being here. Two, I will call you afterwards and get some attire tips. I need some help. So after looking at you, you look awesome. Three, there are no right. There's no right direction. There's no way of avoiding mistakes. They're just going to be different mistakes than the person who's helping you or the book that you read or the AI, or they're just going to be different mistakes. There's no right direction for a 16-year-old or a 58-year-old. There is where I want to be today or better. And I always say or better because I don't know the circumstances, the uncertainty, that's guaranteed. So for anyone, especially someone that's young, is don't worry about the right way. It's called the way, right? So Lao Tzu wrote the way. It's called the Tao. The Tao Te Ching, it's the way. And the way that we go the way is by doing our best, learning lessons and having fun. Now, there's ways to accelerate the way. Find people who sit in a position that you think you want to be in or better and ask them for help. Learn you don't have to make the same mistakes that they made. You'll make different ones, but you won't make the same ones. And some of them are very common and cliche. I love when people, I know this is cliche. I'm like, no, tell me, because you got it. It has to be a truth if it became cliche. Been around for 1,000 years. Everyone said the same thing. It's cliche. Good. Tell me, remind me, because it must be true. It sounds like a good thing. So, you know, find these mentors, do your best, learn lessons and have fun at whatever you do. And I promise you, if you stick to your behaviors and don't worry about I'll be happy when, but instead, for the sake of what am I practicing the violin, or for the sake of what I'm studying Spanish, or if you can answer that question and learn to love those things that you don't like or love, you know, when you can learn to do that, man, you'll be able to enjoy that consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential, and you'll just amaze people where you end up. Does that sound fair? Thank you. All right, last question real quick. Thank you for coming.
Your contribution, so appreciative of it. I'm curious, there's a random question of sitting here watching college football, basketball. If you could reimagine college when we think about learning for us as adults, young adults returning to life, right? And, you know, ending up with their life work. You know, if you could reimagine college, I'm just curious, what would you see in the vision?
Yeah, I would do a 2-year academic college to a specific trade or skill set. That had the general information around that skill set. So, you know, I would, if you want to be an electrician, then you'd have 2 years of electrician school with mentorship, and then make these other works that you read relevant to electricians. So, for example, I would understand and maybe take physics around electricity or metaphysics or quantum physics and include that in those first 2 years. Then I would have 2 years to give back to our country, that you would go to work for free for 2 years for our government in that specific trade. So you would build houses for houseless people because you're an electrician or whatever engineer. You would create AI systems for people to do, if that's what you want to be, an engineer. Or if you're a doctor, you would go work for our government for people that can't afford healthcare and learn. And that would be for 2 years. So that would be your 4-year undergrad. Then graduate school would then get into specificity with more mentorship, internship, residency, similar to a doctor, but to specifics. Also, it would be remote and social. So I would make it remote, but also have social events, even if it's cross trades, so that if you couldn't, let's say economically, it's just cheaper to be at home and take these courses and mentorship and things done virtually. Every area would have like a bar night for everybody that is at that age group, no matter what institution was teaching them. So everybody would just know Wednesday night at Kilroy's is that college night, and everybody would actually have to go. They wouldn't have to drink, but they'd have to go be social. And it probably started like at 4 o'clock and ended at 10. Because nothing bad ever happens before 10. unless you're darting, then it happens way before 10. Does that sound like something that would interest you?
Yeah, absolutely. I know for sure we talk about the strengths that people bring to their life work and what they're doing to do. So like I also see just like self-discovery is a big part of that process too, right? So you understand what your contribution is in the world. It helps to direct what to pick. So I'm just finding with, I executive produce, I do a lot of learning content for experts and organizations. So I'm just finding that to be an interesting mix, right? That make the experience personalized to the person.
Yeah, I think in education, we're going to see the most change. Yeah. We're seeing it, but it still hasn't crossed over yet, but it will. I think way more than autonomous cars. Like someone's arguing with me about in 5 years, there's not going to be one Uber. I say bullshit to that. Like there's so many issues with autonomous vehicles and why people would rather take an Uber. Like it's clean, right? Like an autonomous vehicle doesn't clean up after itself. So by 4 o'clock, every autonomous vehicle smells. These are things, or it doesn't understand police tape. So you have like Waymos that are driving through police scenes because they're not, right? They can't pick it up. So you're a lot farther than 5 years from now, nobody driving an Uber. But I think in education, there's going to be some, in 5 years, when there's going to be some serious opportunities for people.